Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
50 years ago, it was a bunch of farmers angry at the thought of a black teenager and a white teenager being in love. Now, most people would shrug their shoulders at that. Time changed our prejudices, but it didn't change the fact that we were prejudiced.
That's Fabian Nicieza reading from his debut novel, Suburban Dicks. Although this is his first novel, Fabian is known to millions of readers across the world. He's the co-creator of Marvel's Deadpool and has worked on such titles as X-Men, X-Force, and Thunderbolts. Fabian's novel is about a murder that occurs in the suburbs of New Jersey. The two protagonists are Andrea Stern, a pregnant mother who used to work in law enforcement, and her childhood friend, Kenneth Lee, a disgraced local journalist. They team up to investigate the murder. As Andy and Kenny investigate, they encounter racial tensions and uncover a conspiracy that dates back decades. Fabian joined us to talk about pivoting to fiction and how he came up with the idea for this book.
It's something that I had attempted to do several times in the past. I've had the idea for the book lock, stock, and barrel since 1995. So it wasn't that I wasn't writing other things while I was writing comics over the last 30 years. I've done a lot of different kinds of writing. Ironically, the kind of writing that I was never satisfied with was my prose writing. So that's why anytime I attempted it, I kind of just tossed it aside, unhappy with the results. I think when I started to work on the Suburban Dicks novel with the intention of once and for all either finishing it or failing, I started in late 2017. And maybe the amount of time it took and the amount of failure I'd felt in having attempted it before, it was a perfect storm coming together where I felt better about what I was writing. And I got good responses from the people I was showing it to a few chapters at a time. So then I just kept going. And it took me a little over a year to write the first pass of the manuscript because it wasn't my regular gig, as it were. I had paying work I had to do. So, you know, I would just jump at the book, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, as often as I could during the course of a work week. It felt really good to finish it. And my lack of experience in prose humbled me very quickly, because upon finishing the first draft of the manuscript, I had a tremendous amount of work to do to get it into shape, to even present to an agent, much less present to an editor, much less go through the whole process after a book is bought, to continue to fine-tune it. So it, honestly, in 35 years as a writer, I don't think I've ever worked as much on a single piece of work as I did on the book.
So I want to ask you mentioned that you had the idea for Suburban Dicks about 25 years ago. Can you talk about the origin story of the idea?
Yeah, the book is set in the town and the area that I've lived in since 1988. And in the mid-90s, we were living in our first house, and we had a neighborhood issue with a gun club that was on the other side of a pond and a pretty solid stretch of woods between the houses and the gun club. The gun club had been there for 50 years, and the houses had just been built in the last couple of years. This was around 93. So in 95, we tried to have the town council vote to end outdoor shooting at the gun club, because it wasn't just a noise issue, although that was certainly an issue. It was that they were lobbing bullets our way occasionally. My house was hit by a bullet. Another bullet was found on the driveway and in landscape beds in the back. My neighbor's house was hit by a bullet, and we lost in the town council 5-4. We wanted to allow them to shoot indoors, but we just wanted to end the outdoor shooting. So we lost the political fight, but it really opened my eyes up to a negative aspect of the town at that time, which was the townies versus the newbies. You know, all this farmland being turned into housing developments for all these McMansions going up, and the townies who'd been there for, you know, for a century or more, families who'd been there forever, had a problem with having to change their ways, as it were. It just sort of opened my eyes to the way the police was operating and the way the town government was operating at that time. Having lost that battle at the town council level, I was furious, and my only recourse as a writer is to come up with a story that gets revenge. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all. It was just an incredibly kind of childish response to having lost a battle on a political scale. And I came up with an idea in my brain. What if something was discovered that cast the gun club in such a bad light that they'd be forced to close mm-hmm. down? And boom, that was it. Boom. The story just sort of rolled through my head, and the characters were already formulating themselves in my head back then. And it really structured itself in my brain as a beginning, middle, and end. I kind of knew what my story was. And the fact that it took me so long to write it was a good thing, because it really evolved beyond the simplicity of I want revenge. Mm-hmm. You know, it evolved into a story about two people that desperately need to reclaim their lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that was to the benefit of the book, ultimately.
Mm-hmm. You have this exciting, dramatic murder case unfolding against the bland boredom of suburbia. Can you talk a bit about this contrast and how it contributes to your plot?
The bland boredom of suburbia, for me, is more the ability to try to rebel against the status quo norms that we all really willingly accept for our lives, whether they make sense or not. Almost the turgid repetitiveness of everything in our lives. I'm a writer, but I've been kind of anchored to my place, my suburban existence, my home, my family. And saying it's an anchor sounds negative. It is for me from a writing standpoint, because I haven't, you know, I haven't been Ernest Hemingway going out to fight the wars.
No.
and drinking profusely at little taverns all across Europe or South America. So I decided, why not try to have something to say about this? This is what I know best. I've spent 35 years as a professional writer writing fantastical adventures of costumed characters that span galaxies and other dimensions. But ultimately, I haven't experienced that. I haven't lived that. I have certainly lived commuting into Manhattan from the train station at Princeton Junction, you know, and the drudgery of that as a part of your day-to-day existence. So I just decided to kind of lean into it, just kind of go with it. And the part of my brain that results in something like Deadpool was of a benefit to me, I think, when I was writing this, because I kind of didn't take any prisoners in my mind. I wasn't lenient to my subjects. And I had a local reader group look at it, because I really wanted to make sure that I wasn't specifically targeting any individual group with my mockery. I wanted to make sure that I was trying successfully to be an equal opportunity offender, as I put it to them. And they all read the book, and all of them came back to 10 different people, 10, you know, different cultural backgrounds in my town, regular readers, you know, and they all came back and said some of the things were harsh and some of the things were a little rough, but not a single thing wasn't accurate, and you were fair in making fun of everybody equally. I'm not a huge fan of the human race, but I want to be fair in my judgment of them. So I want to try to hate all of humanity equally if I can.
There you go. Very good. Well, that's an interesting goal. The bulk of your novel deals with complicated themes about race and gender. Why did you decide to explore racial tensions and prejudices in your book?
I think from the get-go, the DNA of the idea of the book and the DNA of the development of the story was rooted in old townies versus newbies in a suburban setting. And quite frankly, that automatically, implicitly means Caucasian versus new cultural demographics coming in. That was just a given. That was just a reality. There was no reason to look away from that, and there was no reason to look for something other than that, because it was the reality of the existence of the town that I had been in for so long. What the book did in a lot of ways for me, and certainly recently, the last year, talking more about the book than I ever had while I was actually writing it, talking more about the book really made me start to put into some kind of context my own subconscious experiences, having immigrated to this country when I was 4 years old, having learned the language here when I was very young, but being raised in very middle-class suburban environments where I could see the very soft and subtle kind of prejudices that I encountered, or more specifically, my parents encountered. And none of it ever derailed me, as it were, but it was enough that it gave me a bit of a perspective, an empathetic perspective, to trying to understand the challenges that different cultures face when they come here and the challenges that they have to deal with on a daily basis. And they are, quite honestly, challenges that white America, for the most part, is completely clueless about and prefers to be clueless about, as we see now in our times quite clearly, that there's a strong desire to ignore reality. And that's because everybody grew up with reality comfortably hidden away under a blanket. I'm at a point in my life and in my career where I don't have too many F's to give anymore, you know? I'm not that worried about my career. I'm not that worried about people's perceptions of me as a writer. It's kind of a feel-good full circle that has given me a real sense of creative freedom in a lot of ways, to just finally, for the first time as a writer, I will say what I want to say, how I want to say it, and let the chips fall where
absolutely
they may in that
and regard. That's great that you finally have the opportunity to do that. What impact do you think your experience writing Suburban Dicks will have when you go back to writing and editing comics, or are you not going back?
If anything, it's a wonderful kind of a head break by switching around. I tend to work at my best when I'm not only focused on one thing, because I think I get lost in the weeds when I do that. So for me, I like having two or three things to try to juggle at the same time. Hopefully they're not all on the same deadline is what it amounts to, but I like doing different things at the same time. I haven't noticed it affecting me one way or the other. The truth of the matter is that I way overwrote this first book, and I had to cut a lot because I didn't know any better. I learned a lot. So the second manuscript was much closer, much tighter to what the target number has to be, kind of page count and word count and all that, for the kind of book it is.
Right. Now, you've mentioned that you've submitted the second novel. What can you tell us about it? Probably not much, but there must be a little bit you can tell us about.
Yeah, I can't tell you too much yet. We have a tentative title, but I can't give that out yet. The subtitle will be A Suburban Dicks Mystery. It takes place about a year after this first book. So everybody has some slight changes in their status quo. And I don't want to give too much away about the murder, but I'll tell you that the theme of the book is about marriages and relationships in suburbs, in suburban living. And that in and of itself is reflective of the cause and the reason for the murder that takes place that requires solving. So in the solving of the murder, we will be exploring the relationships of a wide variety of characters. That's the kind of the thrust of the second book.
Mm-hmm. Fabian Nicieza, thank you very much. It was great to talk to you. Congratulations on Suburban Dicks, and looking forward to the next book. Thank you, Fabian.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Fabian Nicieza is the author and co-creator of Marvel's Deadpool. His debut novel is Suburban Dicks. Break the fourth wall with Fabian at wpr.org/beta. As this episode comes to a close, we here at Beta would like to dedicate it to our colleague and friend, Jean Purcell. I want to thank our guests, Paula Poundstone, Ron Friedman, and Fabian Nicieza. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich. And thanks to you, our alphas. I'm Doug Gordon.